Yes, I think the soil is very rich right now, especially off the heels of Me Too and everything that's happening, where we can redefine ourselves, both men and women. And this is not me saying, like, this is what a man looks like. It's just saying you decide what it looks like for you.
Yeah,
you
know? Like, it doesn't have to be what you've always been told it is.
Yes, and I think a lot of us are tracing blueprints from, you know, parents, culture, locker rooms.
Yeah.
Right? All of that should. I mean, we're just talking about you crying and, you know, all that.
You gotta bring it up again? Damn, dude.
Yeah.
To Shit They Don't Tell You, I'm Nikki Limo.
Hello, everybody. My name is Stephen Green.
And today we are joined by our amazing guest. I'm so stoked to have you on today, John Kim. You are an author, a therapist. You started as a screenwriter.
Yes.
I've been following you on Instagram forever. I was just talking about this before
thank you for following me. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, I'm like, it just dawned on me that I could ask people that I have only been following but have never met in real life to come on to our show. Because before, we were kind of like, we're kind of connected in the digital world. So we have like a lot of YouTuber people, actors, musicians, people like that. But almost all of them I've met before. And just recently I'm like, wait, there's so many people I follow that I'm inspired by that I think are really good at speaking on a lot of the topics that we talk about that I just didn't realize that I could reach out and say, hey, want to come on?
Yeah. And so doesn't it, if, and you know, your platform's much bigger than mine, but when you have someone that reaches out to you that has been following you for a long time, like they're OG,
yeah,
doesn't that mean something?
Yeah.
Like the fact that you've been following me before I wrote my books, I was like, wow, that's like my heart warms up. I was like, oh my God.
That's so awesome. Yeah. I found you, and this is like so rare. I feel like it's only been a couple pages that I found this way, but through the Explore tab. Like, I was randomly on the Explore tab.
What did you type in?
Yeah.
You're one of those weirdos who actually uses that thing?
You type angry Korean guy?
Yeah.
Yes, that's like, I was dealing with my dad issues.
Right,
my dad's Asian.
Right.
I think because, you know, like, I follow Wayne Dyer and Eckhart Tolle, and, you know, it just suggests things to you. I don't even think, because the Explore tab, you find it by going to search.
Sure.
So I think I was going to search someone and ended up on the Explore tab, and it just had random, it has random things of what you might like, and it had a quote from you. You had, you know, you do your, some of your posts are written
typewriter.
Out the typewriter.
Yeah,
and I don't even remember what the quote was, but I really liked it, and it was just raw, and it was real, and it was the type of vibe that I really like. And so I followed, I think you might have had like 5,000 or 6,000 followers. I hadn't heard of your blog or anything, and I just found you on the Instagram Explore page with the typing posts.
So you were like, who's this weirdo who can't spell that kind of looks like my dad?
I was like,
because I get Filipino a lot.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you do actually kind of look like my dad.
Yeah, more than Korean.
You look like all of my uncles.
It's because you're tan.
Yeah, because I think there's like there's like darkies.
Yeah, there's like the jungle Asians.
Yeah. I'm definitely jungle.
I get Mexican all the time. So.
Oh, I can see that. I can see that.
Yeah, because I think the white mixture like throws people. They're like, you don't look Asian.
I thought she was Mexican when we met.
Yeah.
Because I always thought I was like, I'm really into Mexican chicks, and I was like, oh cool, of course.
So when you found out, were you like, I want a refund? Or
basically.
He's like,
I was outraged.
And she's like, half Asian hair was like, no money back.
Yeah.
He's
like,
this is it.
He's like, make me tamales. I'm like, I could make you lumpia. What do you want? So I found you on Instagram, and then shortly after I found you, and I liked a lot of your posts. Mm-hmm. You posted a lot about your relationships and divorce and like having expired relationships and how would you explain that? It's like relationships aren't like you just that guy dumped me. It's like the relationship.
So expired. I think it's a mindset. And here's the thing. When I say expired, I know people are like, that's kind of disrespectful to the relationship because now you're comparing your relationship to milk. I get all that.
What?
But here's the thing.
People can chill.
Well, I mean, I think that we do have to respect whatever we went through, even if it was tough, because that's, you know, learning and soil for growth. But if you think that your relationship has expired as opposed to someone did something to you or broke up with you or cheated on you or whatever, it's easier to let go.
Yeah.
It's easier to accept. And it's easier to believe that there's something bigger going on, and there's a reason why you had to go through what you had to go through.
Right, and so I totally believe that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, because
it's not to minimize the relationship.
Right, right. And I think when you're in the process of going through a breakup, it's hard to view things that way because there's a lot of feelings attached. But being removed from that, I totally believe that I wouldn't have such a successful relationship now where I really know what love feels like and what respecting each other feels like and what a healthy relationship feels like if I hadn't been in a toxic, unhealthy relationship. Yes. and learned from it. So really resonated with that. And then you came out with your first book. I have both the books, by the way, if you're looking at this on YouTube.
Wow, John, she's a collector.
Has
I love
two
this.
Books.
So
the,
much ego.
The first one is The Angry Therapist, which is your Instagram handle, too.
Yes.
And it's The Angry Therapist, a no-BS guide to finding and living your own truth. And
by the way, that's duct tape on the cover.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's like, it's real. It's raw.
Yeah.
That's what I liked about your posts, where they were really vulnerable and they were just really real. And so I bought it because I mostly just wanted to support. And then when I read through it, it was exactly what I needed at that time, which I think is the topic of this week's episode, is like living your truth. Sure. Or you're finding your authentic self and being able to like not be afraid to show it.
Yeah. Which is hard.
Yeah, it's yes. really hard.
Yes.
Well, and hopefully we can do it in under an hour and then everyone will know.
Yes.
Perfect.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think one of the things, because I always felt like, oh, I'm living my authentic self, you know, like, of course, like, I know who I am. And you know, I don't need extra things to tell me who I am. But then at one of your posts, you used to do my fucking feelings. I think you still do them.
Yeah.
But you did them on Instagram.
Okay.
Yeah. And my fucking feelings was just like getting all your feelings out and venting, mm-hmm. right, without judgment.
Right.
And reading someone else's inner feelings. Workings and doing that, I was like, I don't judge you for feeling that way because I relate, but I don't know if I could post that.
Mm.
Like, if I realized that, like, what you were saying, if I posted it, I would think that it sounded like whining, and I wouldn't want other people to think that I'm a whiner. And then that's when I really started to examine the things I was posting. Was it really my truth, or was it because here's what I'll show you that you won't judge me so harshly on?
And I love what we're talking about, because especially now with social media, I think there's a lot of people, and I say this often, who exchange their truth for membership.
Oh, I like that.
So I think whenever we are exchanging our truth for membership, whether it is a blog, Instagram post, or friends, or whatever it is, you're turning invisible. You're graying yourself out, right? Your potency goes down. When I was in my 20s, I grew up in LA, and I was chasing shiny things, and I was always exchanging who I was and my truth to be a part of something bigger.
Yeah.
And so I was just like a floating leaf. I didn't have a spine. I didn't have, you know, and so it wasn't until my divorce and starting all over and starting a blog and doing all that where I started to not do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of the beginning of this practice of what you're talking about, being authentic. And it is a practice, right? It's not a light switch. Like,
no.
I think it's hard some days. I think some days it's easier. It depends. But I think social media is a great tool to practice that.
Totally.
With the right intention, and see what happens and how you feel about that.
Yeah, because you can open up and really be real.
Yes.
And then the people that resonate with it, and I've gotten so much more people that resonate with it than that are judgy.
Right.
And I guess it was just my own fear of like, those were the things I didn't like about myself, so why would I show them to the world?
Yeah, and I think if everyone likes you, no one likes you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
I totally agree with that. Yeah. And then,
I'm very disliked.
Yeah.
I get to always say what I like, what I think about things.
Yes.
Yeah, you've been really bold in that way. I always admired that about you.
Well, thank you.
Remember when you made that video and you cried?
No. Were those real tears or crocodile?
Yeah, no, he really.
I was faking it, man.
His relationship expired.
Oh.
And you were really vulnerable. Okay, before this.
This is before he met you.
Yeah, this
we
is,
knew each other. We were friends,
right, but
it was before we got together. And if you like a little bit of his background, he's a troll, like an internet troll. He's a prankster.
Yeah,
he's a comedian.
Yeah.
Almost all of his videos are satire. Mm. So people tend to view him as like this
an asshole.
Right. So then when you cried, you just like sliced through all that and just like, I'm human.
I did this thing on my channel called Tough Talk. And I just tried to always say what I thought about things, whatever they were. And then, you know, half the time I'm doing satire too. But it just, this was a moment where I was driving in to do the show and I had just gotten dumped. And I just launched like from the exactly as I was feeling. And then afterward, I was like, I'm going to post it because that's exactly how I feel. And I feel like people deserve the truth, and I've only said that I'm telling you my tough talk, my truth here. Right. So I'm gonna be like, hey, we can't put this up because I look like a pussy in it or whatever.
Right, right.
So yeah, we put it up.
What was the feedback from that? Those cheers.
That I'm a pussy.
Oh,
I'm a real big bitch.
No, so many people related to that.
A big blubbering bitch.
Well, you attracted one here.
Yeah, no, right. Yeah, so a lot of people were like, I still get messages about that to this day, where they're like, hey, this really helped me because I'm going through this thing, and it's nice to know that you came out the other end, because I came out the other end quick.
Yeah,
I was with this chick like in a week. of that happened. Yeah, I'm not even.
It was 2 weeks.
Yeah,
so
right.
Okay.
It was like 9 days or some shit. It was like, wow. It was crazy.
But that video, I definitely watched it and cried, and then I reached out to you, and I was like, that was so bold and honest of you to post, because I never would have expected that from him.
Right.
Yeah.
Just knowing him as like a friend,
it humanizes you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, that's going goes back to vulnerability, showing yourself, all of that stuff, transparency.
Yeah, which is your newest book, I Used to Be a Miserable Fuck.
Yes.
Is and don't let the title throw you, because it's more aimed, it's towards men, but mm-hmm. I think women can relate too, or at least you can learn to help other men also.
Yeah.
But
I actually, so I didn't want to call it that, the title.
Oh, yeah.
Publisher picked it for you?
Yeah, they picked it.
Because
and then,
of the success of the Mark books.
I didn't want to jump on the fuck train. And
I
was like, no, I don't want to call it
this. I've been calling this for a couple weeks.
Right. And I was like, no, I don't want to call it that. I don't want to jump. And then I sat with it for a while, and I was like, where's that resistance coming from? And I realized I didn't want to call it that because I was embarrassed to announce that I was once miserable, especially as a therapist and all that. And I was like, I don't want to tell people that I used to be miserable. And then I thought, okay, well, then I have to call it that.
Nice.
So then I embraced it.
Yeah.
So there was resistance. And then I was like, you know what? It is what it is.
And
my books are going to have the F word in it, obviously. But, yeah. But I was like, all right, this one, that would be it.
But he, like, originally, like, even with this one, like, a no BS guy, like, this was even before the fuck train.
You know? Oh, yeah. That was.
Chewing, though.
I mean, that's like me in my underwear in my kitchen typing. Yeah. I mean, that's like, well, that's old school.
Wow, we feel intimate there then.
Yeah, for sure.
Hence the duct tape and all that.
Yeah. Yeah, but this, so your newest book, though, it has to do with vulnerability and men and,
yes.
and like, you know, redefining what being a man is, which I really like, because it's not just the, you know, there's a big trend right now of like, oh my God, shut down toxic masculinity and stuff. Yeah. And it's not just that, you know, it's not preaching to shut all masculinity down.
No.
It's
no.
just embracing what it means to be a man.
Yes, I think the soil is very rich right now, especially off the heels of Me Too and everything that's happening, where we can redefine ourselves, both men and women. And this is not me saying, like, this is what a man looks like. It's it's just saying you decide what it looks like for you.
Yeah,
you
know? Like, it doesn't have to be what you've always been told it is.
Yes, and I think a lot of us are tracing blueprints from, you know, parents, culture, locker rooms, right, all of that should. I mean, we're just talking about you crying and you know, all that.
You gotta bring it up again, damn dude.
Yeah.
and also just what remembering that means. You being a pussy.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, oh, that's really relatable.
So it's an interesting time for men to just kind of come into their own, you know. And so that came from me working in nonprofit for 5 years and helping teenage addicts. And the common thread between all of them, and I think within 5 years, I probably hit like 1,000 lives and their families. No dad. So dad was either missing or was absent emotionally or physically.
Mm.
And I saw the byproduct of that. And I was like, you know what? It's time to have a conversation about men. Like,
yeah.
We actually haven't had any conversations about men in a long time.
Yeah, because there's a lot of books for women.
Yes.
I feel like, you know, maybe it's a biological thing. Like women are... I think as a whole, they're a little bit more connected to emotions and feelings, and a lot of. So I feel like there are more books because there are more women willing to share all that.
Men, like generally, men also don't read that much as women do.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, we feel like we should be able to handle it on our own.
Yes.
I think that's really the thing. It's the lone wolf mentality.
Right. Yeah. Like I'm a man.
Yeah.
Like I don't need help.
I got this.
Right. Or I could fix this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll wing it like I always do.
Yeah. Fix it mentality.
Yeah. And then you end up, you know, creating, you end up like Tom Hanks with the volleyball on the island by yourself.
Right. For sure.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the authenticity, because I feel like this relates to everybody. You talk about like your pseudo self versus your solid self.
Yeah. I have a tattoo on each arm, one pseudo, one solid, because I think it's that inner conflict that will always be there. And I know that I used to pull from my pseudo self, and pseudo self is kind of the false version of you. Mm-hmm. It's the salt. It's the side of you that's like we're talking about that actually exchanges truth for membership.
Yes,
it's the one that's impacted by advertising, commercials, like all that stuff, right? High school. And if we're not aware of pulling from our solid, which is usually a faint whisper, we kind of default to our pseudo self.
Mm.
And when we do that, we're at a lower frequency. We're not as authentic. We are a watered down version of ourselves.
That's so true.
Yeah. I think when that happens, you don't attract where you're supposed to attract.
Yeah. Okay. So this is where I feel that happened to me the most is, I've had this YouTube channel for a long time.
Yes.
YouTube.com/NikkiLima if you want to check it out.
Oh, wow.
But it started as a, it started
that was
as
it? That a pseudo self.
That
was solid. That
no,
was
that actually is, I feel like a pseudo self representation because, so that started out as a comedy channel, as a sketch comedy and stuff. But as sketch comedy started to die on YouTube, personality content started rising. Like that was, you had to make to the camera personality vlog style content in order to basically survive on YouTube. So I started shifting that on my comedy channel, but I felt weird about it because I'm like, no, everything should be comedy. I can't like open up on here. It's a comedy channel, right? And so I made a second channel, which was my vlog channel, which I just vlogged my daily life. And I opened up about like, I was auditioning as an actor all the time and how I felt bad about myself because like, I don't feel like I'm not booking a lot.
Yep.
And I felt very mediocre and you know, it wasn't like a glamorous life. It was like a lot of driving in my car to Santa Monica and back to the Valley. And then like a little, it was when our relationship first started. So it was like the beginnings of that and dating and celebrating our 6-month anniversary and just like little things that just like everyday things.
That were real. Yeah.
That like was just like my true, authentic, solid self.
Like, it was like the documentary, and then the other one was kind of like the highlight reel.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
It was like the polished.
Right.
It was like, you know, Steven Spielberg made the movie about my life. And
yes.
It was all edited and properly all like, with music.
Right. And it's all like kind of one angle. Like when she's on, when she's doing comedy channel mode, like it's like one angle. It's like trying to get laughs, right?
Yeah. But with sarcasm, satire.
Yeah. Like real Nikki is like
multi-layered.
Exactly. Yeah. And I wasn't scared to show that on the other channel because I guess I felt like not that many people were watching that channel. You know, it was a new channel.
Right.
I wasn't promoting it heavily. So I just felt like it was my own little cave and I could open up and it didn't have a lot of consequences or judgment to it. That channel started taking off way more than my comedy channel, and I thought, well, if I combine them, then it will just, you know, explode.
Right.
But what I found was after I merged them, I started making the vlogs less authentic, and they were more. I still wanted to appeal to that comedy audience. I was still trading truth for membership in that comedy world because I didn't want to be discredited as a comedian or as an actor by showing like my, you know, real side or my true side. That's since been changed. That was years and years ago. That was in like 2015. But I realized I was doing that a lot, and it was really hard to not do that.
Yeah. So that, what a great example of this pseudo versus solid. And right now we're talking about YouTube channels, but you could actually apply it to anything. You could apply it to relationships. You could apply it to you know, friendships. Anything.
Yeah, like if you're being a certain way around certain friends and then you're a different way around others.
Yes.
I've seen a lot of that.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
people playing to certain people because they're intimidated by them or they want their approval really badly. But then when they're at home with their family, they're just themselves and they feel comfortable.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or the opposite.
And especially like for me, I didn't have a solid group of friends growing up. Like I always felt like kind of an outcast in the friend group. So like they would go hang out without me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just learned to like maybe just not have friends and keep to myself.
Right.
And so whenever I do find a friend group that I click with, I do get really insecure that they're not going to want to be my friend for very much longer. So I feel like I subconsciously, not consciously, but subconsciously will only try to show them the parts I think they like about me.
Yeah.
Instead of like the whole thing.
Where I get my leverage is I don't even make it about me, meaning I think that we as humans and people who have gifts that we're supposed to share with the world, like you guys, if you're not in your solid self, you're doing a disservice to the world because your gifts aren't shining.
Yeah, it's like you're showing a fake gift.
It's lukewarm.
Yeah.
Right? And I think the people who have, it doesn't matter if you're a comedian, actor, or whatever, any kind of artist, I think about people like Bruce Lee, Bukowski, Quentin Tarantino, people who have really strong voices. Like, imagine if they just pulled from what they thought they should be.
Yeah.
They would be, like, so invisible, you know? But they're so distinct. And you know what? It doesn't matter if people hate you or love you. Your imprint is so deep because you are extremely in your solid self.
What about people who feel like they don't know who they are, like, at all, even in their solid self?
And that's fair. I think it's a journey. I think it's discovering, you know? And I don't think it's a constant. So it's not like I'm not here saying that because I went through my rebirth, I'm solid 100% of the time, because that's not true. I'm human. I'm just aware of it, and I try to be more solid than pseudo. And, you know, when you go to sleep at night, you actually, this is how you build a sense of worth. Because if you're always pseudo and you're always exchanging, you know, who you really are to be a part of something or for someone else, you're puncturing your self-esteem balloon.
Yeah.
You're not able to build a sense of worth.
Yeah. Because you don't know what actually is, what value you do have, because you're not ever letting that part shine anyway.
Right. And so to build self-esteem, to build value, you actually have to find your voice and then, like, stand on the box and, you know, draw lines and whatever that looks like, and where you're like, this is who I am, and some people aren't gonna like me and some people are.
That's been so hard, especially with social media. I feel like the more exposure you have,
the more successful, the harder it is.
Definitely.
There's
because
more people telling you suck.
Right. And one thing I really liked in your first book, you talk about non-negotiables.
Yes.
I think that really helped me a lot because... Yeah.
It's the framework.
Yeah.
It is.
You want to explain a little bit about that?
Yeah. So in coaching people, mostly women in relationships who have had bad experiences or been in toxic relationships, I've learned that... with love, we start to negotiate very fast. And then
I don't know what you're talking about.
And then by the time they come to see me, they've negotiated so much. And so I was like, you know, part of building your life space is actually to have some non-negotiables. And there's a difference between non-negotiables and preferences. So if you're like, I will only date someone who, you know,
is 6'4" with blonde hair and named Steve.
Only has, you know, pineapples on his shirt.
Yeah.
They are pineapples. Thank you for noticing.
I bought that shirt.
That's not a non-negotiable. It's a preference. And also being narrow.
You know, I prefer you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'll take others, though, you know.
Yeah, I know.
So non-negotiable would be like, I will not be in an abusive relationship, no matter how, like, hot he is or how amazing the chemistry is or whatever. Or I will not. I will communicate how I feel in my relationship. That could be non-negotiable.
Yeah, and I think recognizing those things, because I feel like, especially in love and relationships, you can say, I will not get into an abusive relationship.
Right.
And then once you fall in love or you think you're in love...
That's what I mean. You're non-negotiable. They go out the window.
Yeah. That's not really abuse that he breaks his promises all the time or tells me that I need to lose weight or, you know.
Yeah, and how you build your self-esteem or sense of worth is to not break promises you made to yourself.
Yes.
So once you start breaking those promises, you're puncturing your self-esteem.
Yeah.
You know?
That's so true. And then for me also, not just in relationships, but in career, I guess, you know, being on the social media platform, I did feel like I was bending towards what commenters would say. So if commenters didn't like a certain way I said things or a certain way, some clothes that I was wearing they didn't think looked good on me, I would stop wearing those clothes. I would stop saying those things. I would really try to adjust who I was to stop getting those negative comments.
How did you feel about yourself as you were molding to them?
I had crazy anxiety.
Yeah.
My anxiety went through the roof. I no longer felt joy when I was about to film. I felt just like crazy anxiety, like I better do everything right or they're gonna hate me.
This is happening now more than ever.
Yes.
Yeah.
For you guys on a macro, because you're following, but also, like, you know, the people that, you know, have 800 followers, and on a micro level, there's still people and they still have the same experience, you know?
And I still catch myself doing it from time to time. It's not like, I'm not perfect in that regard either.
Yeah.
I'm more aware of it now. Like, when I'm doing it, I can catch it and I can stop that habit.
Right.
But I do feel like at least knowing, like, it is putting yourself in check. Like, is this coming from a pseudo self or a solid self is the first step to correcting that type of behavior and allowing those types of things to happen. And
I always like to say to people, I don't think that people are qualified to tell me whatever they feel about me because I don't know them. I don't know their credentials. I don't know who they are. Like, it's like I'm also a screenwriter, right? So if I write something and then my dad tells me that he doesn't like it, I don't think that he's ever written a screenplay before. Right. So it's like, and that's maybe not the best example because people can like or not like stories. But like when he's giving me a structure note on it, I'm like, this isn't going to be beneficial to me in any way. So when I feel like people watch you on a YouTube video or you know, at your school, or they don't like you, or they tell you something about yourself, they're not qualified to tell you that because you don't know, they don't have any credentials.
Yeah.
That's very true. I think because when you're reading comments, you're reading them in your own voice. It, like, at least for me, this is my theory, is that I'm reading it in my voice. So it's, I'm valuing that person's opinion on the same level as myself or someone I know because it's coming from my voice in my head.
I see.
And those things can really like weigh on you because mm-hmm. then you start to develop a false belief about yourself.
Yes.
And then when you start buying into those beliefs is where I think the self-worth and self-esteem.
Yeah, you start crumbling.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I noticed that was what was happening to me. I just felt like I couldn't do anything right. I felt like I didn't know how to say the right things anymore. I felt like, why wasn't funny anymore? And then it was just not fun.
I love that you're talking about this.
Yeah.
Because like as you're talking about this, you're actually being solid and showing yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Which is probably why so many people follow your stuff.
I really feel like this podcast has helped that a lot mm-hmm. because there really wasn't a format before because YouTube is very short form.
Yeah.
And so it didn't feel like I could just talk and
have a conversation.
Like, have a conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Without having to quote unquote perform.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Whereas here it's unedited.
There's something intimate about a podcast. There's something intimate about someone just talking in your ear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
absolutely.
Feel like you're part of the conversation.
Yes. Yes.
Well, and a lot of people who didn't like me before because I always troll and everything, they listen to this show and then they're like, oh, he's like an actual three-dimensional person.
Right.
Yeah.
So they can kind of get a feel for how I actually am.
Yeah.
And not just my troll side.
Yeah. True.
But my troll side's my fun side, man.
Sure.
Like
there's nothing wrong with your troll side.
But I am that person. You know what I'm saying?
But it's
right.
still part of you.
It's still part of
it's
you.
Not like that's a fake part of you.
And it wasn't until recently that we took some test or something, and I realized I'm an ENTJ debater or some shit.
Yeah.
I can't wait to try to poke holes in things because I genuinely love that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's fun for me to do, and it's like a little bit mischievous to cause chaos.
It is.
And I just fucking love it. And that's all. That's really all it is. It's not even me being inauthentic or I'm covering up something with jokes or anything. I really am having fun doing it.
Right.
Well, I think I've heard you talk about this before, is like it's kind of a reunion with your
connection with self.
Yeah, it's a connection to the things that you used to have fun with as like a kid.
Yeah.
You probably mm-hmm. used to have fun
absolutely
doing all things like that. Yeah, and so this is like the adult version of you rekindling that.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean to be a kid.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean to be immature. But I think sometimes growth is about a reunion more than anything else. I've connected to the spirit of like the 12-year-old breakdancer.
Yeah.
Through a CrossFit or
John used to breakdance.
Not anymore. But or like, you know, the 14-year-old that would ride my little Honda scooter with the flip-flops and, you know, but now it comes in the form of a Harley or whatever, right? So like that connection with that spirit of you.
Yeah.
I think that's huge. And so maybe for you quote unquote trolling is you just connecting to that part of yourself that you like.
I think so.
You
know, but then like, also at the same time, I find it hard to I find it annoying for me to share true feelings sometimes to Nikki, say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want to bother her with them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know
like
what I'm
you
saying?
Think it burdens me?
Yeah, like yes. I see that she already has a tough enough time as it is. She has anxiety and stuff. So I don't want to tell her a thing that's bothering me because I want to not burden her with it and I'll just deal with it.
But really, whenever he does share
that's common, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think you've grown a lot in that department because whenever he does share things, I feel like it only strengthens our connection.
Yes.
And then it also gives me the opportunity to help you because I feel like you help me a lot on an emotional level, but I don't ever get to, like, you know, help you.
Right.
So, you know what happens a lot in relationships is this exact thing. But it's usually flipped generally where the woman doesn't want to burden the man because
she has a lot of feelings. I burden him all the time.
Because what happens is if you do that and you don't want to share what you're going through because you don't want to burden someone, now you're doing life around someone instead of with. And that creates drift. So, yes, you don't like vomit every day about your, because that could be negative.
Yeah.
But telling your partner your struggles, your insecurities, what you're going through, what your day's like, produces glue. Like, that's how you do life with someone. Or else we have two people doing life kind of around and you're just sharing like the good stuff. And then that's not real.
Yeah.
Right?
Totally.
So it becomes a highlight reel instead of the documentary.
Exactly. You're doing it to your partner instead of like to the public.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's rooted in me thinking that I'm less of a man if I have her help me.
Interesting.
You should really read this book.
I will.
Yeah. Because I think some of the things in here you have already said yourself. Like, you, like, I think you're, he's very emotionally intelligent.
Yeah.
And I feel like then some of the stuff in there could help you because you would already understand it.
I'm definitely going to read the book.
You just said something really important is like, because there's always something running underneath.
Yeah.
Right? It's never what it's about. It's like the whole, I want you to want to do the dishes, not to.
Yeah.
So you just said something really important. If you do open up and tell her about your day or whatever, you're not only burdening her, that's on the surface, but underneath, that's not what a man looks like.
Right.
And you may not be aware of that, but that's where we pull from. 90%, it's what's happening underneath. It's our subconscious. And so if your definition of man is like, no, I'm not going to tell my wife these things. It's my shit. That's not what a man has to look like.
Yeah, so
when you redefine what your definition of a man is, then suddenly that's going to ripple in behavior.
I gotcha.
Yeah. And suddenly he's vomiting all over you. And
it's like too much. Hey, I can't deal with it right now.
Yeah.
I love this talk. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we will come right back to this because I don't want it to stop. Hey, thanks for listening to our podcast. We just want to take a break to tell you to, like, thanks for listening to our podcast. And if you want to rate it, that would be really awesome for us.
Like, listen, we're on break. We're not talking to you like podcast hosts right now. We're just talking to you like people.
As a friend.
And we just want to say, please rate the show because it helps out huge amounts.
Like, we're not desperate. We're, like, kind of desperate.
We're giving shout-outs right now to all the people who are giving it ratings, so... Huge shout out right now to Brian Jorgensen. That was sick of you, dude. Thank you. God bless. Huge shout out right now to Mark W. in Springfield, Connecticut.
Back to our podcast.
Jenny Blake.
Hey, back to our podcast.
In Tuscany,
and
Florida.
Back to our podcast.
God bless you. Thank you.
Steven.
Thank you for supporting the show.
And we're back. So, yes. I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about yourself and your journey.
Yeah.
So, when did you first realize that you weren't exactly living your solid self and you were living more of a pseudo self?
In my past life, I was also a screenwriter. And I did okay. Like, I sold a movie to HBO. I got hired to write a TV pilot. And then that was like, I got representation. But it wasn't enough to have a career. And then I was also married, going through a lot of relationship problems. And then I got a divorce. And that kind of, I was talking to my own therapist. And he was like, what do you want to do if you can't make movies? And I said, I want to do what you're doing. Like, I want to, if I can't move people like by the masses, I want to do it one at a time. I've always loved psychology. And then at 35, I back to school, got my master's. He didn't tell me that it took 3,000 hours.
Oh, my God.
Which took me fucking 6 years. And then, like, this big exam. So that was crazy. And then when I finished, I was like, I'm lonely. I'm burnt out. Like, the passion that I had to help people was gone.
Right.
And then in the therapy world, there's a lot of things you can't do. Like, it's very strict.
Mm.
It's like you're not supposed to do online sessions unless it's in the state of California. You're supposed to present yourself a certain way. And it was everything that was very pseudo.
Yeah.
Right? And so the internet was just kind of exploding. Webcams were coming out. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to play around with things that are honest to me. So I started to do sessions in coffee shops where you're not supposed to. Mm-hmm. I started to walk with people around lakes. I brought them into the CrossFit box.
What happens? Can you lose your license? Or is that like, was that a risk?
Yeah, and there's reasons why, and I get it, but this idea of being like a hybrid of a coach, it was only like Tony Robbins, that was it.
Okay.
Right? So now, people, I think, care more about who you are than the letters after your name. But when I was 10 years ago, when I started on Tumblr, I like went rogue, and people are like, oh my God, what are you doing? You're a therapist. And this is where I had the conversation where like, what is honest to me, and how do I want to create my practice? I was like, fuck it. I'm going to call myself a life coach because that's the way you do it because there's no board. And then you could create something that's honest to you. And then I created a whole certification online training thing called Journey. And we've graduated like 500 people, but it's helping people help other people in a way that's honest to them.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so that's
so you kind of like create life coaches.
Train. Yeah, I don't create, but yeah.
You train them to find their life coaching abilities.
And then through that, I found my purpose and passion, and of course, documenting and you know, Instagram and all that, and my little typewriter thingies. And now I'm texting people, so it's evolving.
Wait, you're texting people? Oh, as part of the session?
No. So my platform, I played around with. One day I said to myself, I wonder if people would trust me with their phone number.
Mm.
And so I threw it out with this like keyword to text me, and I got like 10,000 numbers.
Wow.
And I was like, oh my God, what did I do with this?
Whoa.
So then I started taking those typewriter thingies and just doing it once a day.
What's a typewriter thingy for those who don't know at home?
It's like in a shot glass, a couple sentences.
Okay.
Like.
Oh, okay. So it's like a picture.
No, it's words. So it's like.
Yeah.
It's
like.
Oh. Love is not a battlefield, your head is. I don't know. Something
I see.
Like that,
okay,
right?
Gotcha.
Right.
Gotcha.
The never exchange your truth for membership. You know, pull from your those little like reminders.
It's like sayings.
Little sayings.
Right. Little. And so I didn't realize how expensive texting, because when you're texting thousands of people, it's actually really expensive.
I wouldn't even think of that.
Yeah. Because it's on a different platform.
Yeah.
So now it's just like, so I made it like $5 a month. And then now I get up every morning and I send a text. And they get it directly in their phone.
That's so cool.
It's just a different way of, and this is like the me connecting to that like kid that loved Legos.
Yeah.
It's a different way of playing with my Legos. Like, how can I help people using technology and just in different ways? So now that's my new little obsession.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about, you were born in Korea?
Yeah.
Yeah, you were born in Korea.
Born in Korea, came here when I was three.
So are you considered immigrant or first generation?
Immigrant, I think.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Immigrant. Okay,
first generation
born,
born
in
here.
Korea.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Because a lot of what you talked about of growing up and how that affected you with like being in an immigrant family but growing up in America, I think really contributes to people struggling to find their identity.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I grew up in the 80s, and in the 80s, Asian people weren't cool. And so I grew up.
They talk about it on JK too.
Before Lou Diamond Phillips.
Before, yeah.
Wow.
Is he Asian? He is.
He's
Filipino.
You know, my mom.
But he plays
the coolest guy ever and everything.
Yeah,
that's true.
My mom was really attracted to Bruce Lee though.
Oh,
like she was.
Bruce Lee got
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was pretty cool.
I think he's a stud.
Yeah,
he was a stud. Yeah, I guess Lou Diamond Phillips. But didn't he play Hispanic roles?
I think he did.
Yeah. He wasn't
but
really.
But he's
Asian.
Filipino, right?
Yep, that's where they put us. That's where they put us.
That's true. It's true. It's funny.
Yeah. I always get
Hispanic
auditions for Latina. Yeah.
But in the 80s, it was like, remember Long Duk Dong and you know, it just Asian people weren't portrayed in media at all, or they were nerds. So I kind of fell into like the skater BMX, and they were all like surfers and white. I was kind of a twinkie, you know? grew up that way. And. Yeah, I just adjusted to culture, and that was you know, I fell in love with activities because I wasn't like smart in school.
Okay,
so I was the kid that
going against the stereotype.
Yes, I wasn't. I wish I was. I was staring out the window, wondering, you know, like if we could fly or what sex felt like, and all these other things. And so I got obsessed with pop culture. So my parents are always working, so I was raised by pop culture, like skating. Bikes, cars, you know, these type of things. And then with that came community.
Did you ever felt like people expected you to act a certain way, or did you feel conflicted, like because your family would have cultural things and then you would go to school? And
yeah, I always wanted to try to fit in.
Yeah.
And I remember my parents, I think what they thought being American was just like to buy me things so people wouldn't pick on me.
Oh.
So like the designer jeans.
Wow.
So, and also they didn't know anything about nutrition, so my house was just like a liquor store.
Wow.
So, you know, Twinkies, ding dong, cereal. So I was a kid on the block where my parents were gone. We also had cable, so you could watch like.
Oh dang, your place
shit.
Is the place to be.
Yeah,
it's like little Disneyland there.
Wow.
Yeah. And then they raided the pantries, and so I kind of got in that way.
I see.
Yeah. Were they hard on you at all, your folks?
No, they were great. I mean, they wanted me to study, you know, the stereotypical Asian, like, we want you to go to school and do well. But they weren't as hard on me. They were just trying to make a living, and so they were working all the time.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah.
You talked a little bit about K-Rage.
K-Rage. Yeah. Yes, it's a thing. Koreans being angry.
Yeah, I think it's all Asians.
Is it all Asians?
I think it's true that,
you know, in Asian culture, this idea of self-betterment, expressing yourself, that's all like new,
yeah.
You know? My dad grew up making his own shoes and, you know, stealing rice and having plates thrown at his, like, they come from like war. And I remember even when I was like 3 in Korea, the restrooms were outside.
Yeah.
It was just like poverty.
Wow.
So they have a lot to be angry about. Like, right. They're not expressing themselves.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like it was kind of a survival mode.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, why would you? You can't be vulnerable and let yourself open to emotions if you're trying to like survive.
Yeah. And I think so for me, I mean, my generation, we grew up with parents who were culturally like just didn't have that speed bump where you are responding instead of reacting.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of, you know, emotion, anger, all of that stuff. Just vibrant.
Because my dad, so this is why I was like, it's all Asians. It's probably not all Asians. If you're Asian out there and you're like, I came from a great, loving household.
Right, right.
Like, it's not everyone, okay?
No, but we're also, just but Hispanic, Italian.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
this
hot-tempered
thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dude,
machismo.
My dad's in the military. I fucking experienced a lot of that.
Yeah.
What she's talking about.
Yeah, the military also as well. Exactly. Anytime where you had to, like, stifle your emotions for the better of everyone else.
Because we're pressure cookers.
Yes.
And that is going to come out somewhere.
Exactly.
Right. So then people are throwing chairs.
So my dad's dad, they immigrated from the Philippines, and he immigrated through the U.S. Navy.
Mm.
So it was military and from the Philippines, and they very similar were there, like in the rice paddies. And they were just they basically came here to America and figured if they could make their kids American that they'd have a better life.
Yeah.
And so then my dad, because of being raised by my grandpa, he was taught to suppress his emotions, and I didn't know until way later. I hope my dad's not listening, but he is a crybaby, and I thought that he
was like tough.
He wouldn't let me cry ever as a kid unless I was hurt. He said I can only cry if I get physically hurt.
Right.
And so whenever I had emotions, he would just yell at me to try to get me to stop crying, which made me cry more, and then he would yell at me to stop crying, and it was just like this cycle. And I just thought he was the meanest guy. Like, I thought he was just so angry and mean, and I thought I wasn't allowed to show emotion, which really was not good as an actor to have suppressed emotions.
As a human being.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I realized how suppressed they had gotten when I tried to go professional with acting, and I was like having a hard time, even though all my life I've been emotional and a crying person. But then I found out later that it was because my dad was actually really sensitive, and he was the emotional one that would get either beat up by his siblings for being emotional, or like yelled at by his dad, or, you know, all kinds of stuff to try to take away emotion. So he was just passing along like what he knew.
Right. That's all he knew.
Yeah.
What's really cool is that our generation, we could actually break that pattern.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think he's come around to it a lot more now.
Yeah.
Like, 'cause a couple years ago, it was like 2020, not a couple years ago, it was almost a decade ago, but we were going on a trip to New York, and it was just me and him, and I was really worried because we had kind of like that high tension relationship, because both of us are control freaks and both of us are kind of emotional, and he gets angry and I just cry.
Right.
And so I was a little worried about it, but I found this grounding since I had not lived with him for a while, that when we came home from the airport, he started getting really angry at me for not knowing the directions to get back to my house, because I was trying to pull it up on my phone on the GPS, but the GPS wasn't loading fast enough. He was like, do I turn here? Do I go? Where do I go? Oh, fuck, you're supposed to know this town. He was really mad. And I just had this like grounding moment where I was like, wow, I've gone to therapy for this, and he hasn't yet. And I told him, maybe you should go to therapy.
Right.
Like, after we found the directions and he was on the freeway, I was like, he tried to make a joke. He was like, why do you have to make me mad, you know? And I was like,
well, when you say grounding, you mean it didn't rock you?
Yeah, it didn't rock me. It used to when he yelled, I would cry. Yeah. Like he would yell, I would shrivel.
Right.
But in that moment, I felt like I had
control.
And that I could see beyond the emotional aspect and not just react to it. And I could just see that my dad was lost, and he gets scared when he's lost or doesn't know the right direction to go. And so it comes out as anger, and I'm the closest person to yell at.
Yeah.
So it back when I was a kid, it was just like, oh no, I messed up. I'm a bad person. He's yelling at me. I did something wrong. But as an adult, I was like, oh, he has emotions because of his own shit.
Yeah. Like, so in that moment, two things happen. One, the gift of you realizing that you've actually grown.
Yeah.
Evolved. And then the other thing is empathy for your dad.
Yeah.
Not seeing your dad as a monster, but like a shadow cast by his own hand.
Yeah.
Like, oh, he's got a story. Oh, he doesn't have tools. Oh, he's... And so that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was the first time I didn't react emotionally to that, and it calmed him down. Like, so...
Right. It changes the dynamic.
Yeah, it changed the dynamic because it was no longer like a two people battling each other, but like I just, you know, put
You dropped the tug of war rope.
Yeah, and then he was able to lighten up, and he was like, hey, why you gotta make me mad? And then I was like, hey, you should consider therapy. And
can we just say, because that's really important, you can't change people, and you shouldn't, you're wasting your time, but you can change the dynamic of a relationship, and that's a great example.
Yeah.
You know, parent and child, where because of your growth or your not engaging or your awareness, you actually did change him because the dynamic changed.
Yeah, and our dynamic has changed like that, like for the better since that day. I'll never forget that trip because of that.
What a good story.
Yeah.
If you cried and you kind of defaulted to the old you, that dynamic would have been the same.
Yes.
He would have gotten angry. He's like, he would say, why are you crying? Because of his discomfort of you crying.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So he's like hijacking that.
Mm-hmm. And that I shouldn't be crying because, like, you know.
On a deeper level, he probably judges him as a dad if you are crying.
Right. That's true. I never even thought about that.
Yeah.
And on the trip itself, the whole trip, he kept bringing up things that I hadn't done since I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. But he... because that was the last time he lived with me, he still pictured that girl. So we were supposed to get up early to go to the 9/11 memorial.
Yeah.
And at that time, you had to go on this scheduled tour. And it was like, it started at 9 a.m. And we had been out till 3 a.m. the previous night at a comedy club. And I was going to wake up right like a half an hour before 9 a.m. So that would give us enough time to get there. And at 8, which was an hour before, he's just hovering over me, and he was like, are you going to get up for this or not? And I was like, whoa, that was a really angry way to wake someone up. And he's like, well, I know that you take 2 hours to get ready. I know you have to put on all your makeup. You got to do your hair. You got to do... And I was like, wow, I haven't done that since I was 15. I was like, I go out without makeup on all the time. And I don't think he even registered that was a possibility that I would go out without makeup.
You haven't lived at home.
Yeah. But yeah, after that, the dynamic completely changed. And then as an adult, I find that I'm just like him. I react to the same kind of things that he used to react to. And I'm like, oh my God, like now I get it.
Yeah. Well, I get it too, because growing up, I got yelled at a ton. Mm-hmm. So I got to say, every time that you are crying or like really raging pretty hard, my first instinct is always to yell. Always.
Yeah.
First thing that comes to my brain is like, I need to yell.
That's your knee jerk.
Then she'll hear me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But I don't do it. I never yell at her.
Yeah.
Because good. I know that I'm like, that's my first reaction. That's like my reflex. Right. But then I'm like, no, that's not how we do things.
Yeah. One of the biggest things in that book is do respond, don't react.
Mm.
And I think it's one of the greatest things that separates boy from man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I used to be very reactive, and I was a total boy. I was a child. So I would do the opposite of you. Like steamroll, raise my voice, whatever it is, right? And I think men think about what their actions, adults, men or women, think about how their actions, their energy, how it's going to affect the other person, and then choose how they want to respond.
Yeah.
That's huge. That would change. That one thing would change the world.
Yeah.
No joke.
Yeah.
Because people are so reactive. And that reaction comes from somewhere. No child enters adulthood unscarred, right? We've all been through trauma and all this kind of stuff. So a lot of our reacting is residue from the past.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and communication too.
Oh yeah,
because I feel like even though you've never yelled at me or anything like that, which is great, I think that that's a huge pattern breaking great thing. In the beginning, I would, you know, let's say I had a rough day or like I wanted to just vent something out. He would get angry trying to fix it.
Yeah.
Like he wanted to
That's another common man thing is like, because if you don't fix it, because of your definition of man, it means you're less of a man.
That's right.
Yeah. And it wasn't till, because I kept wondering how come every time I tried to open up, we'd get into a fight. And I was just like, it's not even about him. Why are we getting mad?
Yes.
And it was because it wasn't until we started opening up and communicating about what exactly happens during these fights, like what is the catalyst to us being like, hey, I want to have a conversation, to us like screaming at each other. And it was that it was intentions. It was a miscommunication of intentions. Like I felt like he was, because of my own past, I felt like he was yelling at me for having emotions. And he actually was getting mad because he wanted to fix it, and none of his solutions were good enough in his eyes. He would offer a solution.
So I felt like my solutions were being disrespected,
and I was just shutting them down. Yeah. And I didn't know how to say, I don't want a solution. I just want to be heard.
Right.
Yeah. And so
if you don't communicate that, all that's running underneath, and then what we have is two people just reacting.
And then it just piles on top of each other. And that's what it did. For a year, we didn't know that about each other, and it just compiled to this point of where we were almost going to break up.
And it's about like, oh, your socks are on the floor, all these little things, but it's not about that.
It was actually toothpaste.
Yeah,
okay, exactly.
That's how we're about to break up. Yeah.
But you can't wait for them to give you a weapon that you can use as ammo in your overall argument about why they suck.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Because it's all in defense of yourself, because you're not communicating.
Yeah. Any man listening to this, you don't have to fix everything.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes people just want to be heard or validated, and that's enough. Like, that's everything. And just be there with them and be empathetic, and it's okay to be like, man, I'm sorry you're going through that.
Yeah.
I hear you, with the period.
That's what I wanted, and I didn't know how to communicate that. It was just that his response wasn't what I wanted, and I didn't know why.
Right.
I just wanted him to, like, hug me and be like, oh, that really sucks, but it's okay.
Yes.
I will say I do that pretty good.
And he does that really well.
Pretty expert at that. But
are you still beating her or no?
Absolutely not.
Yes, every day.
Absolutely.
Every day.
No, but there's a recent thing that I think I do now. Because of that, I maybe overcompensate for solving her problem.
Oh, right.
For not solving her problem. And so in certain moments when she's like, okay, but like, what do you think about this? I need to know what you think about this. I had been playing it passive, and I don't know what to say because I don't want to throw her into a tailspin.
Right. It's a balance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a high wire act.
I think
baby.
It's all just in.
But then you say that
intention.
I don't want you to go into a tailspin.
Yeah.
I do. Yeah.
How can I help?
Like, and I think the most helpful way is like when you just don't present it as a, like, well, what you need to do is this.
Right.
And like, why haven't you been doing this? Like, things like that make me feel like I fucked it up already. It's too late. But things that are like, well, maybe we could try doing that. Like, if it's more suggestive and less demanding, those are the times that have been like the best.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, oh, I didn't think of that.
You know what people don't ask is, how can I love you today? How can I help you today?
I
do. No, that's great.
He's really good at that.
Yes, especially
I wake up in the morning, that's the first thing
I never asked that.
It's amazing. Oh my God.
I need to do that more.
How can I show her I love her today? Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You actually ask her that? And also yourself?
I ask myself that. How can I show her that I love her today? Because I have to show her that I love her. I can't just, I mean, I do tell her that too every morning. But it's about showing too.
What a man.
Yeah, he's amazing.
That's amazing.
I know. I need to do that more.
I was crying in a video though. That's pretty twisted.
Yeah, what a pussy. It's a compromise.
But yeah, I think that it does two things. One, you're actually asking your partner how they want to be loved.
Yeah.
You know? And then two, you're being vulnerable.
Yeah.
You know? So like, again, going back to communication, people don't ask questions like that. They just assume and try to fix and also try to expect. It's a lot of assumptions and a lot of being in your head.
Yeah.
Instead of like being down with the person.
And kind of like pulling from your own issues.
Yes.
It's like it's you're projecting something that's not even happening onto whatever they said or did.
And then cognitive distortions and all of that, you know. And then if you have false beliefs where you feel like you're not good enough, pretty enough, smart enough, tall enough, whatever, all that shit comes up, and then now you are reacting.
And it's like confirming that all the beliefs were true. Yeah.
And none of that is true.
No.
But it's all this in your head,
It's like your head's a lawyer building a case for why you suck.
Oh, God.
And then taking all the pieces as evidence. Yeah.
Yes. The most dangerous place to be is in your head.
Yes.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
That we can take off the air if you don't want to answer it on in the mic, okay?
Yeah.
But I have always wanted to know this from like a psychologist or like a life coach. What's the last thing? Because you're married again, right?
No, I'm not married.
Or you have a,
I'm in a relationship.
You're in a relationship?
Yeah, not married.
What's the last thing that you guys argued about? Like, what do you get into arguments about? Because you're like, you should have all the answers. That's your stereotype, you know what I'm saying?
You know, it's like Phil Jackson can take the Lakers to the playoffs, but he can't throw free throws like Kobe.
Oh, I love that analogy.
You know? That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's like, I have my, I can be reactive and I have all my insecurities and I have a story and all that. So everything that everyone else argues about, you know, everything, it's so any therapist or relationship coach who presents him or herself in a way where like my relationship's perfect, like I think that's a huge red flag.
Totally.
I would lose trust.
Yeah.
But if I come to you and say, you know, I think I could help you and I could help you process, and then, but also I'm human. I've also been divorced. I've also done things that I'm not proud of, and I also, everything that you're struggling with, I also struggle with as well.
Yeah.
Then I'm meeting you at a street level, your level, or, you know, and then we're like, let's do this together kind of thing.
I love that.
Yeah.
I think that that's so much more helpful because—
Yeah, I'm definitely not perfect.
Yeah, I think that's what attracted me to your Instagram in the first place was, I follow Tony Robbins and Eckhart Tolle and like people like that.
Yeah.
But in my mind, it was never, they're like, you know, up here dropping like
behind the podium.
And, and I never related to them. I just took what they were saying, like, oh, okay, sometimes I can apply this to my life. And
yeah, but Tony Robbins says fuck a lot, which I relate to.
Actually, Tony Robbins is pretty, is relatable.
Yeah.
But like,
I actually used to make fun of Tony Robbins, but then I watched his Netflix doc and I was like, oh, okay, I get it.
Right.
But I still feel like, on the conventions that he does, I still feel like he has this like,
yeah, but he's also from another generation.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like he was like the first life coach and a business coach or whatever. And, you know, he's a, but I think the Instagram generation, the generation of influencers, we're interested in transparency.
Yeah.
We're not interested in you being behind a podium or holding a megaphone. We're interested in you being one of us.
And I think they can spot that a lot.
Oh, yeah.
A lot faster.
Instantly, yeah.
So what would you give with identity and purpose, like, because purpose has a lot to do with identity and all that stuff.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to somebody that doesn't feel like they know their purpose or?
Yeah. Well, the first thing is I think we have many.
Yeah.
Throughout our lifetime.
I agree.
Yeah. You know, this idea of like you have to find your purpose. That puts so much pressure. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know when I was lost, if that's all I was hearing from whether it's my parents or the world, I'd feel like. Because I don't have one, I'm defective, you know?
Yeah.
And the thing is that I think we have many.
Yeah.
You know, and when I was screenwriting, that was my purpose, right? And also today as a author, my screenwriting and stuff that I've learned in that world shows in this.
Totally.
Like I write vertically, I do other things. So I think purposes, like dominoes, all kind of like, it's all one flow of life.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing is that we have many purposes and they change as we change. And I, the word passion also, because it's just become a t-shirt and like, quit your job and do what you're passionate about. That's, you know, and I get that. I did that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think what trumps passion is curiosity.
Mm.
So I love this idea of being curious. You
yes.
know? So the moment for me was 10 years ago. I didn't have any, I just started a blog. I didn't have any direction. I was broke. I was just kind of becoming a therapist. I answered someone's email. Like 4 pages, and she PayPal me $20, and PayPal was new.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh my god! And in that moment, I cried. I didn't have the cameras weren't in the phone, so I actually filmed it on a. And I said, when you don't make it about you, the universe does. And I was like crying.
Aww.
And I was like, someone give me $20. It wasn't about the money. It was
about
someone
the principle.
Someone found me valuable. So that was one thing. But then right after that, I was like, oh wait a minute, I can make money off the internet.
Yeah.
And then that curiosity, just like, what else could I do?
Took you in the next direction.
And I was running like groups on Google Hangouts. I was just playing with my Legos again. And I think that's where you start to get passionate.
Yes.
So as you're curious, you get passionate, not the other way around where you're like forcing passion.
Right, right.
So if you are deeply curious about something and what could be possible, what you can do, and it doesn't matter if it's like, what can I do physically or what can I do as an actress or, you know, on how can I, you know, like for me, I'm obsessed with how can I help people in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So if I feed that curiosity, it's going to go toward passion.
Right.
And purpose and all of that stuff.
That's so true.
So
because
start there.
I feel like similar to you, I started in acting and that was like, I was very passionate about that because I was curious. What I loved about acting was what makes people tick, like the psychology behind why people do what they do.
Yeah.
And so I was always into like being the villain character or characters that weren't like me because I really feel like when you are that character, you're not thinking I'm the bad guy.
Right.
You're acting out of something that came from your past psychology, like stuff that happened to you in childhood. And that took me down that path of really studying human behavior. And I feel like, you know, this, you know, 10 years later coming to this podcast is all about human behavior and what makes people do what they do and why we didn't learn certain things and because we were going off of old models and all kinds of stuff like that. So I totally get that. And I also think that there's certain things that I've done out of curiosity that then became a job.
Yeah.
And then it killed the passion and curiosity from
But also in relationships. When you stop being curious about your partner.
Oh yeah.
Right? The passion dies.
Yeah. Ooh.
Like even sex.
Yes.
Like get curious about everything.
Yeah.
Mindfulness. And when you know I'm talking about what would this feel like?
See?
What
if, sex in public. Come on. True. Get on board.
Get curious about this shit.
Get curious, man.
Be a man.
Hey, dude, I need the bathroom to smell like decent or I just get it takes me right out of it, bro.
Oh, I can't do that. Public bathroom? I wouldn't
do it. She wants to do, that's what I'm saying.
Hey, it doesn't have to be a public bathroom. It could be like at the beach. It could be at the park. I'm giving you options.
All right. Sure.
But those I just like something like on a whim where there's a chance we could get caught.
Right, right.
It's like the getting caught thing.
Yeah, yeah. Are you guys, are you the what is that, the Mile High Club thing? Have you guys
haven't done it. You would never do it.
Well, first of all,
I'm too big,
it's
man.
Too small.
It's very too small.
What do you?
I'm extra too big for it.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't make you do it there.
Okay,
but be open to other places.
At the park. She wants it at the park.
Yeah. Apparently.
Yeah.
Or maybe we'll rent a private jet or some shit.
Mm. Oh, that would be. I'd be down for that.
Yeah.
Because then you actually get a room.
Yeah, that's true.
Like a, yeah.
That'd be tough.
Okay. I'll compromise. You get a private jet.
Gulfstream.
We'll do that.
But curiosity.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Everywhere. Bedroom.
That's what we like.
Doesn't matter.
We like going to new places together, like brand new places where neither of us have ever been there, and then that way we get to share each other's thoughts on it. And usually we think the same thing, but sometimes when we thought completely different things, it's really interesting to hear why.
If I'm somewhere and Nikki's not there, it doesn't feel like I experienced it because I don't get to talk with her about it.
Oh.
And that's my favorite shit.
Yeah.
Getting to check in and talk about what's going on. Yeah.
Keeps it fresh.
Like we just went to Disney last Friday.
Oh yeah, we
had
realized
a pretty whatever time, but we got to shit all over it together and it was fun.
But we realized I realized some things at Disneyland is that like I think I want to be a mom now. Like I didn't ever feel like completely ready until like we went to Disneyland and I was like, I guess this is your 30s, right? Because as a kid, you're so excited, you want to be there, like you want to go on all rides. In your 20s, you're like, oh, I don't have to be with my parents and like all these rides. I could just go wherever I want. It's cool. And then in your 30s, you're kind of like, I've been here so many times. Like, I'm not even into this anymore.
Yeah, and even when you're in a new land, AKA Star Wars land, sucks complete ass. Yeah.
Oh, does it? It looks amazing on the advertisement, but it's horrible.
Here's the thing.
It looks great, but it's...
But I never seen it before. Right. Like, at least the Harry Potter fans, they all get to walk through Hogwarts and all shit that they've seen in the movies.
Yeah.
This is a new land. Congratulations. No one's ever been here before. You get to experience it for the first time, but you're like, everyone's only taking pictures of the Millennium Falcon. Nobody gives a shit about everything else because they've never seen it in a movie before.
Oh, it's not...
It's a different planet.
What the hell were they thinking?
That's cheating.
Yeah.
Right. That's like, it doesn't make any sense.
That's like, hey, guess what? Seinfeld fans, we're opening a Seinfeld theme park, but it's not Jerry's apartment you're going to be walking through.
Right.
It's Jerry's neighbor, Fred, who was never on the show.
You get
to walk through Fred's apartment. And then maybe in the very back of the apartment, you'll see a door and it says Jerry's apartment number. And you can walk up to the door and you could look at the door,
but you can't go in.
That's how fucking Star Wars land is. It's a joke.
That's horrible.
Yeah. Everyone walks immediately up to the Millennium Falcon and then like, well, okay.
Yeah, but that's why on all the ads, it's just a Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's so true.
Exactly. They got nothing else.
Yeah.
They got poor Chewbacca walking around 113 degrees in a freaking costume going, trying to make it look like Star Wars, but it ain't Star Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah. well, if we had a kid, I think I would relive that through them.
True.
Mm. I think that like it's all brand new to them. And right. I'm like, that's when you're like, I need a kid for things to be cool again. Because like same thing at Christmas time. I was like, why is this so boring? Like usually Christmas is like, oh my God, it's Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I was so bored because I'm an adult now with no kids.
I actually had a great time because I had kidney stones and I was on Percocet the whole time. So but Christmas was fucking stones. Lit.
That
dude.
Is horrible.
Yeah.
Well, it looks like that's a new chapter for you.
Yeah.
As a mom.
Yeah.
All right, get to work.
Thank you. I will.
Yeah, get start to work, buddy. Well, thank you so much for being on today. I feel like I could talk to you forever about anything. I can't believe it's been an hour already. We like to do this last thing called Final Thoughts. It's just like, you're used to this. It's just like a shot glass, like last final thought about authenticity or truth or whatever we were talking about.
Oh, man, what can I say? Trust your story. It's the most valuable thing you will ever own, because most people want to rip out chapters.
Mm.
And I think there's a tipping point where you not only trust your story, but you start to accept and embrace it, where it becomes bigger than you.
Mm.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then it's not even about, that's where you're like, oh my God, my story is actually powerful.
We didn't even get to the through you.
Yeah, we didn't get to that.
Yeah, yeah. Like, but that's, you got to just get the books,
Yeah.
I'll leave a link in the description. Definitely order the books. But that's, it's just so, so cool.
Thank you.
Yeah.
My final thought is that, John Kim, someday I hope I see a TMZ video of you screaming at your lady outside of a Cheesecake Factory and you're like, well, I don't give a fuck.
Yes.
And I'll be like, he is a real guy. Hell yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It,
that's my
that.
Final thought.
Yeah.
That's your final
Absolutely.
Thought?
Absolutely.
Awesome.
For me, and I don't know, people are all different, but for me personally, I think the biggest transformation into living a truthful self for me was defining who I know I am, and if someone else has a different opinion, just letting them be wrong. Like letting people be wrong about me.
Right.
Because before, I always operated from a defensive place where it's like, they got to understand me. They don't know me. Like I need to prove that I'm not that what they think. But you know what? It's just okay for people to be wrong about you.
You know what helps me a lot is what someone thinks about you is none of your business.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, I like that too. Okay.
As long as the people that I love me, I'm chill with other people who I don't know, not liking me.
Yeah.
That's my
your
real
circle.
Kind of
yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening. Be sure to go to iTunes or rate us 5 stars. It really helps us out a lot. Also, go check out John Kim, the Angry Therapist, on Instagram. Look, check out his books. They're all amazing. And follow us on, you can follow us on Instagram too, or should they don't tell you.
And please rate us. It helps a lot. We really appreciate it.
I already said that.
I know, but I just wanted to hit it again. like we're advertising.
Yeah, well, and you could check us out on Patreon too.
Yeah, that's a fun place.
Hit it again tonight because she wants a baby.
Yeah,
hell yes.
Yeah. I'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.